When it comes to your finances, there are no dumb questions, right? Of course not. And this is the show that can answer them for you. It's Dumb Questions for Smart Money with financial advisors Paul Lane and Brendan Hayes. Presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Dumb Questions for Smart Money. I am your host, Paul Lane, and I am joined by my new co-host, Brendan Hayes from the Armstrong Advisory Group. We loved working with Emma David. Unfortunately, she had a better, more promising opportunity, so she did shift gears, but Brendan will be taking over from here on out. So Brendan, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to bringing up the knowledge level, and I think folks will be real benefited by some of the things that we have to say.
Brendan and I spend a ton of time together, probably next to my wife, the most amount of time I spend with someone.
I think we spend more time.
I know, I was just being generous to my wife on that part. But Brendan, today what we're going to be tackling is 10 year-end tips. We are coming up on year-end here, and it's really important for everyone to take a look at their financial situation to see if there are some efficiencies that they can obtain over the next month or so. So we're going to run through some of the ones that we think are incredibly helpful and that we discuss with clients, and you as listeners out there can see if it works for your financial situation. Brendan, I'll throw it to you first. What is one of the number one tips that you like to tell clients heading into an end of a year?
Yeah, I really like the idea of trying to identify opportunities to cut your cost, right?
Yep.
Right around this time of year, we tend to spend a lot of money, right? All of that additional shopping, and you know, we're just exposed so much to that consumerism. But when you're kind of wrapping up the year, a good New Year's resolution is to look at what you spend your money on, and is there any way to reduce that?
Absolutely. There are some credit card companies out there. I use Chase that has a year-end summary that will kind of give you a breakdown by categories of spending. How much do you allocate to fuel costs? How much do you allocate to going out to dinner? And you can kind of take a look at where are some areas that I can cut back? I know, for example, one thing that's been looming over my head is I paid for HBO Max up front, but right. Comcast is still charging me the monthly cost for the upfront charge for HBO Max, and it's killing me every single time. It's on my to-do list to call them to get that straightened out.
Well, yeah, and it's little things like, you know, are you renting the box from them? Maybe it's a good opportunity to buy the box, right, for
right.
your internet service provider. You know, just these little things, you can almost look at it as a competition either with yourself or your spouse to try and cut, you know, some of these unnecessary expenses out that, quite frankly, sometimes we just lose track. You know, do we have this, a subscription to a magazine that we no longer read? Do we have, like you say, like an HBO that we're paying for that we never watch? All of those things, it's a good time of year to hone in on.
We did a quarterly exterminator service that I don't really think is actually paying off. So that's one of the items as an example out there for folks to maybe cut back on or assess whether you need or not. I'll jump into the second tip that I think that people should be aware of heading in to year end. And this one is the idea of tax loss harvesting. Over what's been a very strong stock market year, there may not be a lot of these positions in your portfolio, but if you have a taxable account in which you purchase perhaps one of these recent hot IPOs, whether it be Rivian or any of the others, Affirm, that have recently come out, and it's actually trading at a loss, you've lost money in that position, what you can do is you can sell that position and take up to $3,000 a year in losses to offset against your ordinary income. The other way it can be used is if you have gains in your portfolio from trading activity during the course of the year, you can take some of these losses to offset them. That way you're lowering your tax liability. And this is something that has to be done by year end in order to be a viable strategy. So looking at some positions that maybe have not done as well, selling those, taking the tax loss, you can also wait 31 plus days if you want to get back into the position to fully take that loss.
Yeah, that's so important to remember, that equity wash rule, right? We don't want to violate it because then we can't take that loss against
right.
our taxes. Another aspect of this is, don't forget, you know, although you can only take $3,000 against personal income tax, you can book those losses for future years.
Great
right?
point.
So, you know, they would refer to that as tax loss carry forward on your tax return. So if you see that, you know, the upcoming year you might have high income, well, don't don't be afraid to trigger more losses, because they will stay on the books.
What's another tip, Brennan, that you'd give to either clients or just listeners out there to take a look at?
I love the idea of taking stock of your beneficiaries, because you know what? It's not just as straightforward sometimes as saying, yes, I have a beneficiary listed. Rather, sometimes you have to understand what it is as far as, you know, what is a contingent beneficiary? When does that go into effect? Does my beneficiary circumvent my will? And the answer is yes, your beneficiary circumvents your will. So how does that interact with your ultimate wishes? I think it's a good time to take stock of who you have on what account.
And this applies to everyone, whether it's you're an older retiree or you're talking a younger person. Who I have a client who just got engaged, you know, previously had his parents on there, now would update to his fiance. Similarly, a lot of people don't realize that bank accounts can have beneficiaries on them. What you can do is use what's called a POD or a payable on death form. I just was speaking with a client recently where they were unaware that that was even an option. And this is another mechanism that circumvents probate by having that direct beneficiary on there. And a lot of people have bank accounts that don't have beneficiaries attached to them.
Yeah. And you know, it gets a little more heightened as well if you've done some more advanced estate planning work. If you have trust, you know, review that legal information. You know, did your attorney wish to have your trust listed as a beneficiary versus an owner, so on and so forth?
Brennan, one of the things that we take a lot of time at the end of the year for our clients is looking at RMDs, what are called required minimum distributions. Tell us a little bit about what people should be aware of if they are over the age of 72 and have to take those required minimum distributions.
Yeah, I think the one thing that gets overlooked a bit is how those required minimum distributions change over time, right? Sometimes we'll hear that, oh, it goes up, but you know, to what degree does it go up? So when you first start to take those minimum distributions, it's about 4% of the value of your account at the end of the preceding year. By the time you're about 92 years old, it's about 10% of what you have in that account. So as you can see, you know, it's a product of the value of the account as well as your age, and that dictates how much you take out. But, you know, that doesn't mean you can't take more in the earlier years if you needed to.
Sure. Right? And your taxable situation goes into that as well. Certainly consult with your CPA, but are there opportunities to take out monies? One of the things that we look at is Roth conversions, which is taking money out of your IRA, paying the taxes at where they stand today, and putting into a Roth IRA, which will grow tax-free over time. You really have to sort of look at in detail where you're going to fall from a taxable standpoint. One of the considerations regarding a Roth IRA conversion is, am I going to be in higher tax brackets in my retirement down the road? Or also gauging, you know, certainly when it comes to planning, all we can plan for is the tax rates we know today, but certainly they are quite low, and we do know that they are set to sunset. So if there are some opportunities to do that, if you're in a low tax bracket, may make sense to look at conversions as well.
Yeah, we kind of segued from that idea of RMDs to conversions. Please know you cannot convert your required minimum distribution.
Important.
The other
point.
Aspect of those conversions is it's much more helpful if you have a real long runway, right? The younger you are, the longer time that the growth of that Roth really has time to incubate and show its strength. So along those veins, today world, sometimes in your 401k plan, they may offer the Roth as an alternative to pre-tax investing. That's a nice option as well, in addition to exploring whether or not now is a good time to convert from your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA and pay the taxes.
Those two tips are really important because they are subject to that year-end deadline, where the RMD, you've got to get it done before 12/31. Unless it's your first one, there's a little bit more leeway there. Roth conversions is the same thing. Contributions to retirement accounts, you have a little bit more time, but those two strategies or really requirements on the RMD side, those have to be done by the end of the year. A lot of the time when you're coming up on year end and the holidays, Brennan, gifting is something that comes up, whether it's grandparents wanting to gift for their grandchildren. What are some considerations that people should have regarding gifting around the holidays in terms of gift tax returns and the amount that they can give to relatives?
Yeah, we get so many questions around gifting, which is fantastic, right? The generosity of folks folks in our conversations. But, you know, you are limited to $15,000 without having to file a gift tax return. It gets a little in depth as to what does it mean to file a gift tax return. Well, the reality is it doesn't result in taxation today, right? Mm-hmm. What it does is it really notes for your permanent tax record the fact that you gifted over that $15,000 limit, and that can affect your future depending on what state you're in as to whether or not you may have an estate tax or a gift tax in the future, or if it's limiting federally how much you may owe. So gift tax returns, you might see that your CPA files that if you gifted over that $15,000 per person per year.
Yeah, it's important to note there that a husband and wife could each do $15,000 to an individual out there. It can be to anyone. So that's certainly one way you can gift. Another strategy would be funding a 529, a college account for a grandchild or for a child. That's another way you could do it. Or you could pay directly to the educational institution. You could directly send the payments there. That's not subject to that $15,000 limit if you wanted to pay directly to Boston College or Providence College, wherever the college may be, to help out someone's tuition bill. Another strategy in terms of gifting from a charitable standpoint is the idea of using a portion of your RMD proceeds and doing what's called a qualified charitable distribution. Now, this has to go directly to a qualified 501c3 organization. Something like St. Jude's, Goodwill are examples of some of those larger charitable institutions that you can take a portion of your RMD, gift it towards those organizations and not be subject to the income tax associated with that.
You know, Paul, I think this particular one is the one that is most either overlooked or misunderstood, yep. Right? A lot of folks used to be able to simply write off their charitable giving. But as we all recognize today, that personal exemption has resulted in most folks not being able to itemize. And what that direct giving does from your RMD is it allows you to get that money out of your name without paying the taxes. So kind of unique, something that you have to wrap your mind around when you think about, charitable giving. But it is an approach that's really, really effective.
Particularly if you don't need the RMD dollars, which sometimes you hear from folks where they're comfortable on their pension and Social Security benefits and they don't need to spend the money. It's a way to lower your tax liability with proper planning in place. The other tip that I would give to people out there is to look at your portfolio and rebalance if necessary. What we've had over the last year has been a terrific stock market, so likely the equity holding of your portfolio is probably a higher percentage weight than what you're used to or accustomed to. So revisit that and make the appropriate trades or sales to reallocate yourself to whatever your allocation may be, whether it be 60% stock, 40% fixed income, or 70% equity, 30% fixed income. Reviewing any positions that have gotten out of control is another thing to take a look at.
Yeah, and you really can't overlook this one, folks. It's tremendously important. And you know, what's playing out in the markets recently is, you know, some of those bigger names that had tremendous run-up in 2020, you know, they're taking it on the chin, right? And we know that, you know, the easier side of the trade, believe it or not, is the buy side.
Yep.
The hard side, it's the sell side. So you really have to commit yourself to saying, hey, you know what, when is the time to cut, you know, when's the time to take my gains? And, you know, the year end is a good time to do those rebalances.
Zoom, PayPal are examples of companies that had tremendous years in 2020. Peloton's another one, but they've come back down to earth, all three of those companies. So maybe taking a look at those positions and saying, should I sell some of those off and take the gains that I've made over time? That's a consideration as well. The other piece that we'll tell folks is to examine your insurance coverages and costs. I mean, for myself, I'm actually looking into term life insurance, just had a baby boy over the summer, and that having that term policy in place in event of, you know, a catastrophe, that is important. So making sure that all your insurances are aligned properly, year end can be a good cleanup time to take a look at some of that stuff.
Yeah, and for folks that have had policies for a long time, you know, sometimes a sit down to really examine the policy can put a lot of extra money in your pocket, because some of these policies have performed much better than expected, and sometimes you can get away with not paying the premium. premium. Understand the policy, though. Not every policy has that attribute. But, you know, understand, how do those premiums work? Is this the right policy for me? Should I be in whole life? Should I be in term life? Could my employer's plan be the place that I should be placing my dollars?
Yeah, certainly a real concern there, just making sure you have everything, your ducks in a row there on the insurance side of things. The last one that we'll touch upon today is the idea of your estate plan. Maybe taking some time, Brendan, to sit down and review the estate plan that you have in place and make sure that everything is properly titled, because oftentimes we see when we meet with folks that they did the trust work, but they don't have it properly titled for their investment accounts.
Yeah, it's so true. Investment accounts or even property, right? Sometimes you may have chosen not to put this one property into your trust for, you know, various different reasons, but maybe it's time to reconsider that, right? One of the goals or objectives behind doing these estate plans is often to avoid probate, and you might have that property that's just the thorn in the side of your heirs in the future if you don't take a couple of minutes to re-examine that plan and make sure that it is in good working order.
There's a lot that we've covered today, and Armstrong Advisory Group actually has a guide that covers all 10 of the subjects that we discussed today. We didn't hit all of them, so if you would like to reach out and obtain a copy of this free guide, you can give us a call at 800-393-4001, or you can go to our website at armstrongadvisory.com and you could download a copy of this guide. Really in-depth guide that goes over many considerations that you should have regarding year-end and financial planning concepts to consider going forward. Additionally, if you'd like us to cover another topic on the show, now that we have Brendan joining us for the foreseeable future here, email us at dumbquestionsforsmartmoney@armstrongadvisory.com. If you have any suggestions or feedback for something for Brendan and I to tackle going into the next couple of episodes here. For my co-host, Brendan Hayes, this is Paul Lane for Dumb Questions for Smart Money. Thanks so much for joining us, guys.
If you have any questions for the podcast, email us at dumbquestionsforsmartmoney@armstrongadvisory.com. That's dumbquestionsforsmartmoney@armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated, Emma David and Paul Lane representatives. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.